We talk about the occult. The word occult means unknown. And so almost anything that we don't know about is in the area of the occult. For some of us, that's physics, or math or whatever else it is that you're failing in. You're right in the ballpark when you say this is a part of the occult and I don't understand this and I don't know what's going on. And to that degree, you know, a whole lot of things could be included in this. There's some guidelines that I want to make kind of nail down. And one of the things that I didn't nail down first is the fact that everything that is mysterious is not demonic. Oftentimes we talk about the occult, many people have the idea that the occult, you know, equals satanic. And that's not necessarily so, because there are many things that we do not understand about, and in that terms may be a part of the occult. For example, there are those who lecture on the occult who would put faith healing and glossolalia in the occult, not because they are demonic, but because they are supernatural and we don't understand how that works. You know, don't understand what exactly is going on. It can't be scientifically studied or has not been as much as maybe it needs to be. And those are in the areas of the occult. To some degree, conversion is in the occult, in that kind of area, because I don't understand how a man that lived 2,000 years ago lived and died and supposedly, you know, was resurrected, but whom I have never seen physically with my eyes. I don't understand how that man can have a relationship with me living in 1977. But I believe he does. You know, and that's my whole life is staked on that, and the experience of my life goes out of that. And yet for many people who've never had that experience, when I describe it, you know, they say, man, that's a part of the occult, because that's a strange, unknown experience to me. I don't know what you're talking about. But there are some other areas that have more characteristically been a part of the occult, and let's mention those, and then we'll go in the areas that you'd like to look at particularly. For example, there's some in the area of, I guess one of the words I would use would be the forces of the universe, of supernatural powers. And these are different kinds. Astrology, for example, emphasizes the forces of the universe, the stars, and their relationship to man, with the idea that as in the heavens, so on earth. The way the stars operate together up in the sky, that's the way things operate down here. And the basic premise of astrology is, what is known, basic group, is called natal astrology, meaning that when a person is born is the most important time, because at the time of his birth, he gets zapped by all of the rays that are emanating at that particular moment from all the different stars, particularly those that are in the constellations that have become a part of the zodiac, and which astrologers look for. And however, whatever he's hit, that means he's born under such and such a sign, which means that a certain constellation is in a dominant place in the sky during that time. And therefore, his or her personality will be characterized by that throughout his life. If he cooperates with that, then he'll be happy. If he doesn't follow those patterns and those inclinations, then he'll be unhappy. It's as simple as that. So astrology is a continual search for how I can bring my life into accord with these forces of the universe that have not only started on my life when I was born, but continue. And a part of that means, you know, that if the stars are together and are very close, then those of us who are born in those signs, you know, you're going to feel very friendly toward me being here tonight, because we're under those kind of signs. On the other hand, if you're born under a sign and I'm under a sign, and during this time of the year, you know, they're at opposites in the sky, that means that you have this unusual revulsion toward me standing here. I have this feeling in my mind, you know, what in the world is that weirdo doing here? You know, I hear these bad vibes coming off, you know. And it's not really us, you see, that's doing this. It's the stars in opposition to one another, and we simply are affected that way. And so astrology is an attempt to find out what those forces are and to believe in them and to try to follow them out. There's another whole area in the area of witchcraft. And witchcraft primarily is the forces of nature. And you talk to many witches, and they will not say that they are in league with the devil, Satan, nor are they in league with God, but they're in league with the forces of nature, the forces of the woods, or the trees, or the spirits that are in the rivers, and so forth, and in the moon, and this kind of pattern. And so witchcraft comes from Anglo-Saxon word meaning the wise ones, Wicca meaning the wise ones. And in every culture, there are those persons in tribal religion that are known as having particularly possessing certain knowledge of these forces of nature. And they tell people how to live. They have particular powers. They can do magic. And magic, as we use it in the area of the occult, has a special definition. It is the magic is the use of a formula, either in word or action, by which a human being controls a spirit being. Magic is a formula, either in word or action, by which a human being controls a spirit being. For example, in the American Indian rain dance, magic really sort of is the reverse of astrology. If astrology says whatever happens in the sky will happen here, magic is reverse of that and says what so on earth as in so that's what happens in heaven. In other words, if we work out and dance out a particular formula imitating the fact of rain, you see, then that's going to affect all the sky up there and it's going to rain. Well, what happens when you do a rain dance and it doesn't rain? Well, it's very obvious. Somebody either said the wrong thing or they had their right foot out when they should have had it in, you know, and so we have to go do that again. And the wise man or the wise woman in every tribe or culture that believes in witchcraft is the person who knows those formulas. And in America, we call that a part of the occult. In the area outside America, we call that primitive religion or tribal religion. In Africa, in South America, and among American Indian, that's tribal religion. And we sometimes have used the term, for those of you in anthropology classes, you could do this better than I. We call that primitive religion. But I don't use the word primitive because we sometimes get the impression that primitive is simple or that it's stupid. But it is not. It may be very highly complex. In Oklahoma, you can become an ordained Baptist minister faster than you can become a full-fledged witch doctor in an American Indian tribe. Why? Well, primarily because tribal religion is verbal. You don't go to the library. You know, there's no bookstore for the shamans to go and buy their formulas. It is learned in an apprenticeship by which a person goes and learns across a period of time. And you have different kinds of magic and different kinds of witches. A witch is a person who does magic. And in terms of resource materials, are any of you ACT team leaders in your church? Accent magazine that deals with for gals and accent age had just come out in January and February issues with some articles by Tommy Starks, who was a former director of our department and who I understand was here, a couple of years ago, for those of you who are old-timers. And Tommy has written 8 lessons on the occult. And they are excellent, and I can refer you to them as being good resource materials. And Tommy points out, as have others, that there are really 3 different kinds of witches. There are white witches, black witches, and gray witches. And after watching Roots this past week, you understand where the white and the black witch imagery comes from out of Europe during the Middle Ages. Because white witches do white magic, and white magic is the doing of magic for good. Like getting a date with a girl that you really have been wanting to date, or getting a job, being if you have the right formula and carry the good luck potion, you know, you're the 13th in line, but the guy at the desk calls your name and you get the job over the other 12 that were ahead of you. That's what a white witch does. A black witch does magic for evil. And this would be to put a spell on another person who is a rival for a love affair or for a job or for some sales contract if you were a salesman. and the black witch does black magic. Now, the gray witch is not somebody whose hair hadn't changed entirely or hadn't used Grecian formula. It's a person who can do either. A gray witch can do either white magic or black magic. And there are persons who identify themselves in all three of these categories. Let's talk about some other forces. The force of the occult that really identifies itself with the force of evil. And we're moving here in the area of devil worship or satanic worship. The occult in America came into its own in the last 10 years, and is the clue is how much the media pushes the occult. When the occult is discovered by the media, the people everywhere start talking about it. When they grow tired of it and forget it, it drops. And it started 11 years ago now, in 1966, with Rosemary's Baby, first book and then the movie. And people began getting interested. And at that time also is when some of the TV programs began, you know, like Bewitched and Sixth Sense and Rod Serling and other of the time, sometimes very scary, sometimes very funny. You know, my wife has been trying to clean our house for 10 years by doing her nose, you know, and by blinking, and it just, the things just don't operate like they do on TV. But people began thinking about that, of having witches living next door and talking. High schools began to have local witches, you know, and I don't mean a teacher who was a mean old bat. I mean, you know, a student who actually believed they had the capacity to work magical spells. And during those days, when I was traveling a great deal for our department as a representative of our department, as Dr. Jones is, only on the East Coast, you know, one of the typical things you'd have in a church when you spoke on the occult was have somebody come up after and shake your hand and say, "Hey, you know, my sister's a witch," and expect you to be shocked by that. But after you've heard it, you know, every second place you go, you aren't shocked so much anymore. But that everybody was interested. Ouija boards were selling terrifically, and people were having seances and church training groups after the adults left, you know. And all kinds of things were taking on. Well, Anton LaVey played the part of the devil in the movie Rosemary's Baby. And it kind of went to his head because he organized also that year in 66 the Church of Satan with headquarters in California. And in the copy of book that Dr. Jones held up, there's a picture of the house. It's the only one on the block painted all black, so you can't miss it. The headquarters, his car license plate is Vampire. And he organized a group based on much of the witchcraft that came out of Europe and England in the Middle Ages. He brought out a book called The Satanic Bible, and you could get it at any bookstore. It really was not so much evil-oriented as it was flesh-oriented. And their ritual is a celebration of the flesh and of fleshly appetites. For example, let me simply read you some. Love your enemies and do good to them that hate and use you. Is this not the despicable philosophy of the spaniel that rolls over on its back when it's kicked? Hate your enemies with a whole heart. And if a man smites you on one cheek, smash him on the other. Smite him hip and thigh, for self-preservation is the highest law. He who turns the other cheek is a cowardly dog. Give blow for blow, scorn for scorn, doom for doom, with compound interest liberally added thereunto. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, eye fourfold, a hundredfold. Make yourself a terror to your adversary, and when he goes his way, he will possess much additional wisdom to ruminate over. You see, it's that kind of don't be like Jesus, but rather be demanding of yourself and do whatever you want to do in the kind of life in which you live. Now, Anton LaVey himself and his daughter, who is a high priestess in the group, both say that anybody who really believes in the devil is a nut. Even though they have organized a group called the Church of Satan, they themselves do not really believe in the existence or the power of Satan. And when Dr. Starks was lecturing at Golden Gate Seminary about 2 or 3 years ago, they had Anton LaVey lecture to the class and tell about his organization. And a class on the cults and the sects. And at that time, he gave the last figure that any of us have ever heard about the membership of the group. He said there were at that time 200,000 members across the United States. You won't find them in Yellow Pages, but they're still around in various communities all across this country. And I'll be willing to bet that there is at least one of them in Oklahoma City area as well. But though LaVey himself does not believe in Satan, there are persons who do and who align themselves in real Satan worship, who literally play the Faust in selling their soul to Satan and seek to align themselves with him. Now, oftentimes they will say, you know, we realize that God's going to win in the end, but right now Satan is in charge of this world, and we're going to be on his side, kind of like the Republican who knows that Carter's in, and though he's never eaten peanuts in his life, he says, man, I really love peanuts. I'm going to order, you know, a bucket full to always have them around the house for at least for the next 4 years, you know, in order to get in good. And so many persons follow that same kind of thinking of saying, okay, I'll get in with Satan worship and be a part of that. That happens in rural areas. It happens in middle of urban areas. And so it's not just in one particular section of our society, but there are Satan worshipers all over. And all of these are dealing with the powers, the forces, and, of course, the force of evil. And related to that, of course, has come a new interest and concern over the fact of demonic possession or demon possession. The movie The Exorcist in 70, 71, 72 was a bestseller, both in book and in movie form, when you were probably some of those maybe that stood in line for 2 or 3 hours in order to get inside to throw up, you know. But the concern of a person who could be overtaken by the demonic forces to such a degree that they lost all control of who they were as a person was pictured there, and then it became a pattern, and there was a new interest in demons throughout America. And there were many people who were interested in that, as well as the rite of exorcism, which is casting out of demons. And if there had not been so much interest in demons, you wouldn't have the book in your bookstore of Angels, 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 written by Billy Graham, as he says. You know, it's only as the interest in demons came that the opposite interest in a manifestation of God in personal form in angels grew as well. So we have that kind of book. That has sort of gone down. At that time, the real height of the occult was 71 and 72. And that's when the news magazines hit the newsstand, you know, Time, and then Newsweek, and the third week, U.S. News and World Report. And then in 74, they hit it again, only, you know, whichever one got it first, the other two follow the next week. With some very good articles, by the way, on the whole area of the occult. And talking about the supernatural. And this brought a great deal of discussion. I've sometimes said that the year of the Exorcist was the most religious thing that happened in America that year. Not because it was biblically based or really was a Christian movie, but the fact that it raised religious questions. You know, what is the power of evil in our lives? How do you get rid of evil? How do you study the Bible? All of these are religious questions, and they evoked a great deal of conversation. And an unusual opportunity for those of us who are Christian to have some input and some knowledge there. But this is one area of the occult, the whole area of forces, okay? That's one. A second area is in the area of communication, of forces that would enable us to communicate one with the other through some seemingly supernatural or unusual means. The area, for example, of parapsychology. And related to that, ESP, or extrasensory perception, the ability to communicate without the use of the typical five senses. Now, that's kind of new to Americans. Orientals have had it, you know, they always have had a sixth sense. They always have believed that there is a third eye here. And they can't understand why Americans get all excited about ESP. It's a part of their ball game. But we do, and we're new in the Western world. And this has been a part. It has been studied scientifically. Of all the areas of the occult, ESP has been studied more than any other from a scientific basis. J.P. Ryan at Duke University started in 1932, and Duke has had a department of parapsychology ever since. It's one of the world's leaders in this area. It's expanded in other ways. Now, ESP is relationship between people and communication. And all of us, perhaps when we take a minute to ask back and forth the experiences we've had, all of us have had some kind of experience where we have made, had something strange happen to us, a premonition that something was going to happen or that somebody was in trouble, and we found out later that it really was. And that's sort of an area of ESP. Another area of ESP, or of extrasensory perception, is what's called clairvoyance. And that's knowledge, you might say, communication between people and things. There are persons who, if you lost, the notes that you'd made in a class and you just had to have them or else you were going to flunk, you could go to and they'd say, they're in the bottom drawer of your dresser and the third one down on the right-hand side. Right-hand side to the left, okay. And but are there persons, psychics, who find things in that kind of way? Another area is in the area of spiritualism. And spiritualism is the communication between people who are living and people who are dead. And that's what a seance is. There are really four people involved. There's you, who wants to make contact with the dead. There is the medium, who is the person who conducts the seance. There is the medium's contact, a person in the spirit world who's already died, but who this medium has known and had contact with before. And then there's the person that you want to contact, a relative, typically. Let's say my Aunt Sally. And so I go to the medium and I say I want to speak to Aunt Sally, and Aunt Sally. And so the medium goes into a trance as we all sit there and calls Captain Joe, who was who ran the slave ship between Africa and America many long years ago, and who she talked to before. And Captain Joe goes and finds Aunt Sally, and the message comes back, Aunt Sally says she's doing fine. And that's just about how earth-shaking most of the messages that come back from seances are. It's a very, very simple kind of thing. And there's a lot of con games going on. A lot of people have noticed that there are hidden microphones and hidden speakers and wires that make the table move up and down and that kind of thing related to spiritualism. But there are others who find no such paraphernalia and who say that these things actually do happen. Also related in communication in the area, that has to be, I guess you'd say, astral projection. And by that, it is the ability to leave your body and to go somewhere else. Do you have any Ekankar groups on campus around? Are you familiar with the word Ekankar? Ekankar is a group that believes in astral projection. When they meet like this, for their weekly meeting, what they're telling about is where they've been since last they were there. And they don't mean simply to Oklahoma City. They mean to Venus and to Mars and to other spots where they have projected themselves. And they believe in that capability of the soul leaving the body and traveling to a place and then coming back. Science fiction moves in a great deal of the whole area also of playing around and toying and describing that kind of area. Now, there is another area. The third area is an area, I guess you'd say, of prediction, and that's looking out into the future. Gene Dixon is a big name on the current scene. Edgar Cayce is another, C-A-Y-C-E, a Kentuckian who died in the 60s, but who before he died, in addition to demonstrating the capability he had of diagnosing illness at a distance while he was asleep, known as a sleeping prophet, Edgar Cayce also got into futurism. He talked about Atlantis, the hidden city. He talked about reincarnation. He talked about the years that Jesus spent between the time he was 12 and was 30, the silent years, and he told what happened during that time. He began to predict things in the future, and everything worked well, really, for that group until 1967, when Los Angeles did not fall off America, like everybody has been expecting that part of California to drop off on the fault there, but it didn't. But his son and followers continue to maintain a center in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and to take the readings which he gave while he was asleep and try to analyze them and try to say that this is a way of looking into the future. And you go into any occult shop and you'll find 20 of his books on the shelf. There are other things that are part of that, some of which you're familiar with, like palm readers. There have always been persons who read palms, the tea leaves, crystal balls, looking in the future, tarot cards. The Ouija board, once again, is either both a predictor and a communicator, facilitator. One of the new things is I Ching. I Ching is a Chinese fortune-telling procedure. And the way the Chinese do it is to use, you know, the sticks like you use in pickup sticks. You know, you let them fall and you try to pick them up. Well, then they tell fortunes that way. The way they fall, that's the way it's going to be. And they've Americanized it by using pennies. You flip 7 pennies. And the order in which they come up and how many tails and how many heads you have, you flip through the book until you find that pattern and the order in which they fell up, and that's your fortune for the day. So you have both prediction of all different kinds of looking out into the future. Now, those are the basic areas related to the occult. And I think we need to, let me say some things about them. In the area, I want to say, I think we ought to study them as Christians from our viewpoint, from as many different angles as possible. We ought to study them from the area of history, of sociology, and of psychology. We ought to understand them from a theological basis, from the biblical point of view, from a spiritual basis. And sometimes we get more help from one than from the other. For example, let's look at the occult sociologically. Every time in history, in every society, whenever things get tight, an interest in the occult goes up. Every time the situation gets tight, the money's tight, the businesses that have and the answers that have always been given in the culture, you know, don't quite work, people either go for new answers or else they go back to the oldest ones. And tribal religion is the oldest of all religions. And so there's an interest in raising in the occult. Or it can be an area of we can understand some things psychologically. Much of magic, you know, magic works if you think it works, which talks to us a great deal about the mind and the place of the mind in the whole area of the occult. And there's what is known as self-fulfilling prophecy. Of it works because you want it to work. Some of you may have heard Doc Starks tell about that great theologian Joyce Brothers, who was told in the Ladies' Home Journal, another theological magazine, about going in the early days of the interest in the occult to University of Southern Cal in a psychology class and talking about astrology. And of telling how what the horoscope was about and how it was supposed to tell you who you were and what your personality was and how you're supposed to relate to other people. And then offered to do a horoscope for the people in the class. And she told him, you know, take a sheet of paper, write your name on it, write the place, town, and state that you were born, write the time you were born, and the date, you know, the date, the hour, if you know it, if you don't know the hour, 12 noon, and I'll do a horoscope for you. So they did that, turned their papers in. She came back the next day, they handed out all the papers out, and everybody got finally figured out their own individual paper. They found a paragraph there of 10 to 12 lines, and they read that, and she said, okay, now how many of you believe that I, you know, the horoscope I've done for you is you, you know? I've really pegged who you are and described you. And there were 100 people in the class. 85 out of 100 raised their hand and said, man, I don't know how you did that, but that's me, you know. And then she said, okay, please exchange papers. And when they did, they discovered she'd Xeroxed the same paragraph on all 100 sheets, you know. And everybody was reading the same thing. But because 85 out of 100 wanted, you see, for this to be something that they could believe in and could, you know, see something happen, they say, oh, yeah, that's me. So there's something psychologically that I think in various areas of the occult we need to understand. We need to understand, for example, that the way hexes work is that, you know, we respond that way. In Tulsa, about 3 or 4 years ago, I was leading a group on the occult. We were in a Baptist church, and we broke for lunch, and the church was providing lunch. And once again, there were about 100 people who were there in our group. And so I get mischievous about once every 5 years, and that was my time, you know. And so I just said, oh, yeah, by the way, I've put a hex on 4 of the salads.
Well, we're going to have salad today in along with our lunch, and I put a hex on it. And those of you who get those four salads, you know, about 15 minutes after you eat it, you're going to get a pain on the left side of your stomach. And one of you may be even serious enough that we'll have to take you to the hospital to have it checked out. You know, okay, let's be dismissed and go to eat. And I was kind of last out of the room talking with various people, and so I was in the last in the line. And sure enough, we had tall salads that day, you know. And as people went through the cafeteria buffet line that was there, you know, I noticed some of them kind of looked back at me, you know, and then they kind of, nobody really stuck out their tongue, but that's what they meant, you know. It's kind of, yeah, yeah, you know, I'll get, nothing makes any difference to me. Other people didn't look back at me at all, you know, they just picked it up. Other people kind of looked back and then went on. Now, at a, you know, that kind of a supper, don't you pick up everything that's there? You know, if you pick up the salad, you pick up the plate, you pick up the roll, you pick up the dessert, you know, and you move on. Well, when I got there, you know, 100 people, I was about number 98. There were just about two plates left, you know, but there were 25 salads left. And that's when I realized, you know, that my mischievous thing of simply saying, you know, you better watch the salads because I put a hex on some of them. For at least some of those people, you know, I said, that many people don't go by and leave a salad, you know, because they're on a diet or because they can't eat lettuce or something, you know. But as a reminder of how much our mind is affected, and most of us are not used to having somebody come up to us and say, I'm putting a spell on you. I'll take it off, by the way, you know. We're not used to coping with that kind of pattern. And so we need some encouragement and some knowledge about how to cope with that kind of thing. I said first, if you remember, that not everything mysterious is demonic. And we must be very careful lest we fill gaps with the demonic. If you don't understand anything, it does not mean the devil is there. It may mean the devil is there. It may mean God is there. It may mean that you can't explain it by either way. You know, it's very hard for us to come here to meet. You know, here we've planned a meeting. It was planned, 9 months ago. But who would know, you know, that if tonight would come up with a basketball game that you have here, you know. Well, now, what causes that? One interpretation is you might say, well, Satan did it, you know. The real explanation of why this has happened, and I don't understand how this should happen, but the real reason that Oklahoma University has been able to win and get this tonight, and therefore so many people are not here because they're at the game, is because Satan did that. Well, I think this is an important meeting, but I don't really think that having this meeting and this try to scuttle it in one way or the other, that Satan started, you know, affected the whole basketball schedule of what your basketball team has done. You know, you can't really say God did this, Satan did it, it just happened. But on the other hand, you know, I think, so we must be very careful lest we suddenly say the devil is here if we don't understand something. It may be God. And it's very interesting that we've had a switch in our culture, though, to where we begin to fill all the gaps with the devil. We used to let God fill those gaps, and the only place we still do it is in hospitals. When somebody gets well and they weren't supposed to get well, you know, say, oh, God was here. God worked a miracle. And I can affirm that, you know. But I want to caution us that sometimes in other places when God may be just as active, we don't know about it, and so we ascribe that to Satan. That doesn't mean that it's not Satan, but we need to be more discerning. And that's why in 1 John 4:1, the writer says, you know, brethren, don't disbelieve any spirit that comes along, but test the spirits and know where they are and be able to speak in that area. Having said that not everything is demonic, let me switch it very quickly and say anything can be a way by which the demonic enters our life. It can be something evil. Can be anger. And my desire, instead of seeing another person as a person, seeing them as a thing and venting my anger against him. And the demonic can enter my life in that way. It can be something that's neutral, like money. Money's not good or bad. It's a neutral thing. Paul said it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. It's when it gets bigger than you are that it becomes demonic.
Or something that is good can become used by the demonic. Our differences, male and female, our capability and our attractiveness one to the other and sexual attractiveness, is given to us by God. This is His gift. And the ability of man and woman to love one another is the highest of His gifts. And yet we all know that it's a very short distance between love and lust. So that something very good can, even of itself, become a means by which the demonic enters our life. And so we always want to look not only at these areas of the occult, but of any area, to say, okay, in what way can this become an avenue whereby I transfer my allegiance from God to something else? And as far as I basically see the occult, that's the real issue. It's the issue of idolatry. The occult raises something else other than God to the place that someone worships and wants to have it. And we need to watch that and to be able to see that God is not... God is the one God, and He is to be worshipped. Let me remind you that when the Jewish people came out of Egypt, went into Canaan, they struggled with people who were already practicing many of the areas of the occult and tribal religion. There was magic, there was astrology, there was spiritualism, talking with the dead, there was necromancy, also worshipping and working with the dead. There was child sacrifice to demonstrate belief in the the God that you were part of. There were all kinds of sacrifices for fertility rites as a part of the culture. And you have commandments, and we won't go through them, but Deuteronomy and 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles are filled with admonitions to the Jewish people not to participate in the idolatrous practices of those with whom they settled, of warning them against astrology, of warning them against magicians, of warning them against other areas. And we find it all continuing on in the New Testament. Of persons who were filled with demonic spirits, of those who were astrologers, of those who were magicians. The book of Acts is filled with that. In Acts 8, Acts 9, Acts 16, Acts 19 are areas. And if you'll come to Glorieta during student week, I'm going to be leading a group on studying the occult in Acts. And so I'm going to do that tonight. Here are where the early church and the early Christians came up against persons who were active in the area of the occult and were victorious over that. Some scripture passages have been very helpful to me as principles. And so let me simply give them to you. One, the most basic one for me, is 1 John 4:4. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And it seems to me like that's one of the places where it is set forth that God is the strongest spiritual force in the world. You see, I believe in the supernatural. And I believe that God is the strongest supernatural force there is. And whatever a person believes about the demonic and its power in one's life, you can believe in God's power as being even greater. And that power, I do not believe that Satan is in charge of our world. Because I think that's one of Satan's lies. Colossians, Ephesians both point out that when God came in Christ, at the moment of the resurrection of the cross, it says we are transferred from darkness into light. The victory has already been won. The mopping up operation is still there. Satan is still active, but he's not in charge of our world, as Jehovah's Witnesses believe. And we need to remind ourselves of that. God is the strongest spiritual force there is in the world. Secondly, we need to recognize that as Christians, we've got to be on the defensive and take the armor unto us that is there. In Ephesians 6:11-13 is a passage here where Paul, you remember, says, put on the whole armor of God that you'll be able to fight off the fiery darts of the evil one. You can expect, if you're a real vital Christian, that you're going to be bothered by the demonic, by the satanic. And so you need to get ready. James 4:7 is not only defensive but offensive, because James says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Now, let me put an Eagle Heart aside in there. Don't just resist the devil in your own strength. But read the verse ahead of that where it says, draw near unto God and submit yourself to Him. Resist the devil in the strength of Christ. Because every time you try to fight him in your own strength only, you're going to lose. But these are passages that to me have meaning and give me strength in my own life. And so I think, you know, that all, there are reasons that people get into the occult. Part of it may be novelty. Just wanting something new. When the novelty wears off, they go to something else. The people who were into the occult 4 years ago are into CB radios now. You know, and the new language instead of covens was, you know, 10-4 and good buddies. And when they learn that language, whatever else will come along, they'll be for that. There are others who are into it for sort of counterculture, for rebellion, as witchcraft was originally, a rebellion against the church, of taking everything that was holy and doing the opposite. And that's what the Black Mass was, of taking the current worship practices of the Roman Catholic Church and making a blasphemy of them. Another part, I think, is a way to control life. And that's what witchcraft is, primarily to control other people and to control nature. It can be a way to escape life, to escape responsibility. The astrology, you know, believe, you know, I don't really control my life, the stars do. Or demon possession kind of, I think, is seen by Flip Wilson and Geraldine, who says, you know, the reason I bought this dress was I really didn't want to buy it, the devil made me do it. And that's a great cop-out. You see, I'm not responsible for what I do and how I act. It's the devil who's responsible. Don't blame me for the things I do. And for some people, an interest in the occult and in demon possession can be a way for them to try to escape responsibility for taking hold of their own life and exercising responsibility. Okay, I've done all the talking so far, and we have only a few minutes, but let's see. What are your comments and what are your questions about the whole area we've talked about? What kind of activity you have here on campus and in town? Rick Shepherd was saying that Mike Warnke had said that one time there were 13 different witches' covens here in Norman. Yeah. That's a dated figure, but at least acting. Yeah.
I haven't heard anything for a few years. A few years ago, I put out a little kind of paper.
Well, I think it has peaked out and is gone. It's no longer the fun thing to do, kind of thing. But the people, there have always been people who've been involved in the occult. They've typically been more underground. Now it is, you know, with the new freedom to be more open. As a lady in Atlanta last Sunday night told me, you know, she was sitting in a restaurant in their local community and heard a guy say to another person he was talking to in the next booth, you know, I'm a devil worshiper. And, you know, she said, he's my neighbor, you know, lives two doors from me. And knowing him, I could believe it, you know, because he's always out into the new and the different and doesn't want to do what everybody else does. But there are persons who are still active and doing that kind of thing. Okay, what else?
I had a patient who had these on her arm one time. But can you tell by this?
You mean tattooed kind of thing?
Uh-huh. That's not quite, it looks like a football, doesn't it? But it's kind of like a cross on top of it. It's like a cross is what it looks like.
No, I don't know.
I just don't know.
Yeah. The other is a cross and the other is an Islamic.
What? The star and the moon?
The star and the moon. Oh, okay. Or could be. The sign of Islam is a star and a crescent.
How do you test the spirits with a passage of this kind?
Excuse me?
How can you test the spirits? Call that verse on 421. How
are
you yourself?
Okay, I think, you know, you have to, this is part of what the Spirit wants you to do in terms of persons when they come to really say, persons, for me, the real checkpoint is Jesus Christ. Jesus is the way I find out what God is like. And as you'll hear me say, you know, tomorrow and tomorrow night, whenever I come to compare religions, for me, the comparison point is Christ. You know,
It's not just what do you think about Christ, but how is this leader of this new religion like Christ? Does he lead persons to trust in them or turn persons away? And so that's one of the things I discern in any particular recommendation that comes to me, is this, if I follow this, will this make me more dependent upon Christ or less? For example, Martin Marty, a Christian theologian in Chicago, has said, in the area of astrology, particularly about horoscopes, you know, reading the horoscope in the morning, said, if that's just fun and games, that's one thing, but if when it becomes an alternate religion, that's another. Guy one night in Greenwich, Connecticut, said, in a group in a local Baptist church, said, you know, yeah, this stuff you're talking about, astrology, yeah, I can take it and leave it. It really doesn't mean that much to me. And I said, okay, tell me about, you know, what do you do in astrology? And so he told about how he lived with his mother, who was blind, and of how before his mother got out of bed in the morning to determine whether she was going to get up, dress, eat, you know, and just be around the house while he went off to work and came back. He was unmarried and lived at home to take care of her. He had to go out and get the newspaper and bring it in and read the horoscope for the day. And on the basis of what her horoscope said, she decided whether to get up, you know, or stay in bed all day. And I thought that was a beautiful illustration, you know, of here's a guy who said, you know, you take it or leave it. Of here, it seems to me like this, for this woman, that had become her religion, you know. That was the way she chose how she was going to live every day. There is a certain dormitory in a Baptist college in America where the girls do the same thing. They come down in the morning, get in the lobby, get the newspaper out, lay it on the floor, look at their horoscope for the day, and decide whether or not to go to class, whether to study for a test, whether or not to take a date that John had asked them for, you know, for the weekend. Now, I'd submit to you that, you know, in terms of discerning, for me, that has become an alternative religion. And the Christian, I think, is supposed to be dependent upon the Spirit of Christ as that Spirit comes to them. So that's one checkpoint. Another would be the Scriptures and where authority comes. You say, where is dependence? Another would be this kind of shortcut. You know, is magic a means to get control over another person to really evade responsibility but not really having to do it? For example, if I want to date with a girl, and I'm really not attractive enough, or my personality is not pleasing enough for her to like me for what I am, you know, and so I go the shortcut of getting a love potion from a witch, and I slip it in her coke, you know, and she suddenly turns around and says, wow, where have you been all my life, you know. That shortcutting a personal relationship and taking advantage of using, you know, using this as a way of making another person be attracted to me. Now, I think, you know, that is against what I understand man is supposed to be. You know, that he doesn't use that kind of shortcuts of magical patterns. That's sort of how I interpret that, yeah. Are there other means that some of you do that, yeah? So I think we have to say, you know, for some people, even though Martin Marty says it can be fun and games, I've had enough contact with it, I'm not sure it can ever be just fun and games. For some people it may be, but simply to open yourself up to the area of the demonic may be for some persons an invitation, you know, for that to come in. For example, I've seen some people, you know, play with a Ouija board and it repeats. Now, scientifically, persons have figured out the Ouija board in the sense that, as you know, we have developed enough scientific understanding now to know that the brain is an electrical system, and there are messages that come to the brain to the muscle to say, okay, raise your arm kind of thing. And we have enough sensitive materials, equipment now, to be able to test the voltage that comes down, you know, through the muscles to make them work out of the brain. And so they've even hooked up people at Ouija boards, you know, when you put your hand on the little thing and let it float around, and consciously you say, well, I'm not moving it. But the machine that's on recognizes, you know, that there is a mental direction coming down that the muscle is saying, move. And so even though I ask, let's stay with my dear Aunt Sally for a minute, you know, I say, well, what is Aunt Sally's birthday? I can't think my lifetime, you know, what in the world Aunt Sally's birthday was. But I heard it one time, maybe twice. You know, and our unconscious is a great filing cabinet. And I heard that, and it got put back in the unconscious, you know. And so while I'm asking the Ouija board, my mind is going back through the filing cabinet, you know, Aunt Sally under S, you know, and birthday, you know, December 13. And it tells my arm, you know, and I suddenly it spells out December 13. I say, wow, you know, and I go ask my parents, you know, when's Aunt Sally's birthday? And it's December 13. Wow, how smart that Ouija board is. Scientifically, you see, it can be described as that way. On the other hand, some other experiences, there's a young lady here in Oklahoma who is a school teacher and involved in trying to get a girl who is into Ouija boards and into seances and into various areas of the occult out of them, wouldn't get involved with Ouija board with her until finally she said, you know, why don't you do that? She says, okay, I will this one time, but you got to do it like I want to do it. Okay, we put it on the table. You sit on one side, I sit on the other side, and neither one of us touches it. We simply ask it a question, and it will move itself. Okay? Never done that before. I don't know whether it'll do it. Well, we'll see. She said, okay, let's ask it, you know, are you in league with God or in league with Satan? And the girl said, the thing moved without anybody touching it and spelled out Satan. They asked it other similar questions, and the demonic answers kept coming back until finally this girl, who had been the advocate of it all, got frightened and says, you know, I've never seen this. I've never really been aware of what I was coping with here. Let's get rid of this thing. You know, and they took it out, and they tried to burn it. It wouldn't burn. It took them 5 days to chop it up into little pieces and pour charcoal lighter on it, you know, and light it and burn it, and it wouldn't burn more, and they chop it up some more and do that kind of thing before they ever finally got rid of it. Now, that's not a sign, you know, that every Ouija board is like that. I want to say, on the hand, there are scientific explanations. On the other hand, I think there are some areas that have no scientific explanation, but more spiritual explanation. So I think we need to be very cautious. And for the person who is involved in the occult, oftentimes I think they're searching. They're searching for real meaning. And we need, as Christians, to be able to say, hey, look, that's a dead-end street. You don't have to be afraid in your life anymore. You can get in league with the greatest spiritual power there is, God. Trust yourself to Him. Okay? I think it's past 8:15, right? And we're supposed to take a break. So let's do that. We've got to shut off Kate Ellen in there, if we can.